Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 480, titled Plum Island, Lyme Disease, and the Eric Traub File. This is being recorded on October 3rd of the year 2004. In this program, we're going to take a look at a possible connection between Lyme disease, a very debilitating disease carried by ticks that began in the East and is now spread around the United States, and Plum Island, a U.S. Department of Agriculture research facility in Long Island Sound that also doubles, or has doubled in the past, as a biological warfare research facility, and a fellow named Eric Traub. Eric Traub was in charge of bacteriological and virological warfare research for the Third Reich. He reported directly to SS Chief Heinrich Himmler, and then he was brought over to the United States at the end of World War II as part of Project Paperclip, in which top Nazi scientists were recruited in order to work for the U.S. National Security Establishment. And we're going to examine a possible connection between Traub's research, ticks contaminated or carrying Lyme disease, Plum Island and the spread of that disease abroad, or off of Plum Island, I should say. We're going to be taking a look, or relying for our material in this broadcast from a book called Lab 257 by Michael Christopher Carroll. It's subtitled The Disturbing Story of the Government's Secret Plum Island Germ Laboratory, published in hardcover by Morrow Books, copyright 2004. And the full detail, all the details, ISBN number, etc., will be in the description for the record 480 when that is up. Now, about the recruitment of Eric Traub by the U.S. at the end of World War II, we read from Lab 257. Near the end of World War II, the United States and the Soviet Union raced to recruit German scientists for post-war purposes. Under a top-secret program codenamed Project Paperclip, the U.S. military pursued Nazi scientific talent like forbidden fruit, unquote, bringing them to America under employment contracts and offering them full U.S. citizenship. The recruits were supposed to be nominal participants in Nazi activities, but the zealous military recruited more than 2,000 scientists, many of whom had dark Nazi party past. Parenthetically, the best known of these recruits were people like Wernher von Braun and the other rocket scientists who helped to pioneer the American space program. Wernher von Braun was an officer in the SS. Continuing, American scientists viewed these Germans as peers and quickly forgot they were on opposing sides of a ghastly global war in which millions perished. Fearing brutal retaliation from the Soviets for the Nazis' vicious treatment of them, some scientists cooperated with the Americans to earn amnesty. Others played the two nations off each other to get the best financial deal in exchange for their services. Dr. Eric Traub was troubling on the Soviet side of the Iron Curtain after the war and ordered to research germ warfare viruses for the Russians. He pulled off a daring escape with his family to West Berlin in 1949. Applying for Project Paperclip employment, Traub affirmed he wanted to, quote, do scientific work in the USA, become an American citizen, and be protected from Russian reprisals, unquote. As lab chief of Insel Reims, a secret Nazi biological warfare laboratory on a crescent-shaped island in the Baltic Sea, Traub worked directly for Adolf Hitler's second-in-charge, SS Reichsfuhrer Heinrich Himmler. And skipping down, just months into his paperclip contract, the germ warriors at Fort Detrick, the Army's biological warfare headquarters in Frederick, Maryland, and CIA operatives invited Traub in for a talk, later reported in a declassified top-secret summary. Quote, Dr. Traub is a noted authority on viruses and diseases in Germany and Europe. This interrogation revealed much information of value to the animal disease program from a biological warfare point of view. Dr. Traub discussed work done at a German animal disease station during World War II and subsequent to the war when the station was under Russian control. By the way, Traub did much of his research in the United States, continuing pre-war research in the United States. Ironically, Traub spent the pre-war period of his scientific career on a fellowship at the Rockefeller Institute in Princeton, New Jersey, perfecting his skills in viruses and bacteria under the tutelage of American experts before returning to Nazi Germany on the eve of the war. Despite Traub's troubling war record, the U.S. Navy recruited him for its scientific designs and stationed him at the Naval Medical Research Institute in Bethesda, Maryland. By the way, I would also note that Traub's Nazi affiliations were already very much present and on the public record well before World War II. And this referring to his participation in the Nazi Motorist Corps called the NSKK. In fact, NSKK's first member joining in April 1930 was Adolf Hitler himself. Traub also listed his 1930s membership in America Deutscher Volksbund, a German-American club also known as Camp Siegfried. Just 30 miles west of Plum Island in Yaphank, Long Island, Camp Siegfried was the national headquarters of the American Nazi movement. So again, Eric Traub had a strong American assignation well before World War II. Now we're going to take a look at how Traub and Plum Island, a USDA animal disease research facility, came to hook up, skipping down again. Everybody seemed willing to forget about Eric Traub's dirty past, that he had played a crucial role in the Nazis' cancer research program, the cover name for their biological warfare program, and that he worked directly under SS Reichsfuhrer Heinrich Himmler. They seemed willing to overlook that Traub in the 1930s faithfully attempted Camp Siegfried. In fact, the USDA liked him so much it glossed over his dubious past and offered him the top scientist job at the new Plum Island Laboratory not once, but twice. Just months after the 1952 public hearings on selecting Plum Island, Doc Shahan dialed Dr. Traub at the Naval Laboratory to discuss plans for establishing the germ laboratory and a position on Plum Island. By the way, before continuing, parenthetically note that the Nazis' biological warfare program was under the rubric of cancer research program. In our many programs dealing with AIDS, such as RFA-16, and some of our discussions with people like Ed Haslam, Dr. Leonard Horowitz, and others, we've taken a look at how it appears that the Special Viral Cancer Research Program in the United States was actually a cover for, among other things, biological warfare research, and may have yielded, among other things, AIDS. And there's a disturbing body of evidence indicating that AIDS was deliberately created. Continuing. 6 years later, and only 2 years after Traub squirmed in his seat at the Plum Island dedication ceremonies, senior scientist Dr. Jacob Traum retired. The USDA needed someone of outstanding caliber with a long-established reputation, internationally as well as nationally, unquote, to fill Dr. Traum's shoes. But somehow it couldn't find a suitable American. Quote, as a last resort, it is now proposed that a foreigner be employed. The Aggies' choice? Eric Traub, who was in their view, quote, the most desirable candidate from any source, unquote. The 1958 secret USDA memorandum, Justification for Employment of Dr. Eric Traub, unquote, conveniently omitted his World War II activities, but it did emphasize that his originality, scientific abilities, and general competence as an investigator were developed at the Rockefeller Institute in New Jersey in the 1930s. The letters supporting Traub to lead Plum Island came in from fellow Plum Island founders, quote, I hope that every effort will be made to get him. He has had long and productive experience in both pre-war and post-war Germany, unquote, said Dr. William Hagen, dean of the Cornell University Veterinary School, carefully dispensing with his wartime activities. The final word came from his dear American friend and old Rockefeller Institute boss, Dr. Richard Shope, who described Traub as careful, skillful, productive, and very original, unquote, and again quoting, one of this world's most outstanding virologists, unquote. Shope's sole reference to Traub at war, quote, during the war, he was in Germany serving in the German army, unquote. Declining the USDA's offer, Traub continued his directorship of the Tübingen Laboratory in West Germany, though he visited Plum Island frequently. In 1960, he was forced to resign as Tübingen's director under a dark cloud of financial embezzlement. Traub continued sporadic lab research for another 3 years and then left Tübingen for good, a scandalous end to a checkered career. In the late 1970s, the esteemed virologist Dr. Robert Shope on business in Munich paid his father Richard's old Rockefeller Institute disciple a visit. The germ warrior had been in early retirement for about a decade by then. Quote, I had dinner with Traub one day out of old time's sake, and he was a pretty defeated man by then, unquote. On May 18, 1985, the Nazi's virus warrior Dr. Eric Traub died unexpectedly in his sleep in West Germany. He was 78 years old. A biological warfare mercenary who worked under three flags, Nazi Germany, the Soviet Union, and the United States, Traub was never investigated for war crimes. He escaped any inquiry into his wartime past. The full extent of his sordid endeavors went with him to his grave. While America brought a handful of Nazi war criminals to justice, it safeguarded many others in exchange for verses to the new state religion, modern science, and espionage. Records detailing a fraction of Eric Traub's activities are now available to the public, but most are withheld by Army intelligence and the CIA on grounds of national security. But there's enough of a glimpse to draw quite a sketch. And what we're going to take a look at next is one of the early contractees of Lyme disease, a fellow named Stephen J. Nostrom, who actually wrote a letter to the newspapers, and that helped to spur a number of people coming forth about the disease. The account of Stephen J. Nostrom's infections in the mid-70s. I began to feel like a man made out of glass, like someone hit me with a baseball bat and shattered me from the top of my head to the balls of my feet, unquote, the nuclear power plant guard recalls. Never in my life had I experienced such pain, unquote. His hands gnarled into contortions and his vocal cords weakened and then became paralyzed, rendering him mute. The left side of his body went numb. A rheumatologist misdiagnosed him, just like doctors misdiagnosed the children of Old Lyme, Connecticut in 1975, with rheumatoid arthritis. Then, the neurological symptoms set in. He experienced violent mood swings where he would be calm one moment and bawling silly the next. A newfound sensitivity to light made him a prisoner in his home, with the shades drawn and lights turned off. Noise was magnified 100-fold to the point that the vibrations from a person walking across the floor were excruciating. His incessant, reflexive coughing was so powerful it broke three of his ribs and brought up large globs of blood. When he told the doctor he suspected he had the long misunderstood ailment Lyme disease, the doctor laughed. But with the help of his wife, a registered nurse, he diagnosed himself with 38 of the 40 symptoms of Lyme. Results showed he had some of the highest known titers of Borrelia burgdorferi, or BB, known in New York State. That, by the way, that's the microorganism that produces Lyme disease. Continuing, he was ordered to a hospital bed for intensive intravenous antibiotic treatment. The treatments for Lyme disease, which can range from oral antibiotics to massive weekly IV infusions, are like, quote, trying to put out a forest fire with a watering can, according to another sufferer. The symptoms subsided 6 months after the tick bite, but came back with new fury 5 months later. More IV antibiotics were prescribed. I remember sitting in my doctor's office and saying, Doc, you know, I think I'm losing my mind, unquote. His heart, trying to cope with the large doses of chemicals, was failing him, but he figured he had nothing more to lose. He was dying. Teetering on the edge, the security guard mustered up what little strength he had left for one last hope. A deeply religious man, active in his church as a lay minister for some 25 years, he turned to a higher power. I could no longer speak. As the joint pain became unbearable, this one finger hurt so much I wanted it amputated, and I asked the doctor to amputate it. I prayed to God, how do you expect me to preach when I can't speak? And he said, you have a typewriter. Type. And I had one crummy finger left that I could move. It was the little finger on my left hand, and I'm right-handed. He began to pinky type, letter by letter, click, clack, click, whatever came to mind. In the very first sentence, he punched the I key too hard, and it broke off and fell to the floor. 40 years old, and I began to cry like a baby, and no sound came out, unquote. He finished the letter, carefully penciling in the I's, again quoting, it was the most humble letter I've ever written in my life, unquote. He didn't think anyone would even read the pathetic-looking, half-typed, half-scrawled epistle. But plucking Stephen J. Nostrom's letter out of the thousands she received each day, the nationally syndicated advice columnist Ann Landers not only read it, she printed it. What happened next was completely unexpected. Nostrom received hundreds of phone calls and thousands of letters from Lyme disease sufferers and their family members who shared his pain. Quote, people were actually calling up telephone operators to get the exchange for Matatuck randomly dialing numbers beginning with 298 and asking, "Is there a man in your town with the initials SJN who's involved with Lyme disease?" Unquote. Buoyed by the overwhelming response, he began to help heal himself by helping others. He set up a makeshift command center in the basement of his home. Nostrom started one of the nation's first Lyme disease support groups. Guests from around the country came to his monthly gatherings at the local library. Through his organization, the Lyme Borrelia Outreach Foundation, Lyme Borrelia is the technical name of Lyme disease, he published a newsletter, sent out audio tapes, distributed literature, and hosted a monthly cable television program seen across the country. He spoke at civic associations, churches, and schools, and testified before a special U.S. Senate committee on Lyme disease. Skipping down. Next, Stephen J. Nostrom came across the book The Ballara Secret by John Loftus, one of the people we spoke about in For the Record 479 that you just heard. And John Loftus's Ballara Secret sparked an inquiry into the possible Eric Traub Plum Island biological warfare connection to Lyme disease. Skipping down. Attorney John Loftus was hired in 1979 by the Office of Special Investigations, a unit set up by the Justice Department to expose Nazi war crimes and unearth Nazis hiding in the United States. Given top-secret clearance to review files that had been sealed for 35 years, Loftus found a treasure trove of information on America's post-war Nazi recruiting. In 1982, publicly challenging the government's complacency with wrongdoing, he told 60 Minutes that top Nazi officers had been protected and harbored in America by the CIA and the State Department. "They got the Emmy Award," Loftus wrote. "My family got the death threats," unquote. Old spies reached out to him after the publication of his book, The Ballara Secret, encouraged that he, unlike other authors, submitted his manuscript to the government, agreeing to censor portions to protect national security. The spooks gave him copies of secret documents and told him stories of clandestine operations. From these leads, Loftus ferreted out the dubious Nazi past of Austrian President and UN Secretary General Kurt Waldheim, parenthetically a good buddy of Arnold Schwarzenegger's. Continuing, Loftus revealed that during World War II, Waldheim had been an officer in a German army unit that committed atrocities in Yugoslavia. A disgraced Kurt Waldheim faded from the international scene soon thereafter. In the preface of The Ballara Secret, Loftus laid out a striking piece of information gleaned from his spy network. Quote, "Even more disturbing are the records of the Nazi germ warfare scientists who came to America. They experimented with poison ticks dropped from planes to spread rare diseases. I've received some information suggesting that the U.S. tested some of these poison ticks on the Plum Island artillery range off the coast of Connecticut during the early 1950s. Most of the germ warfare records have been shredded, but there is a top-secret U.S. document confirming that, quote, clandestine attacks on crops and animals, unquote, took place at this time." Eric Traub had been working for the American Biological Warfare Program from his 1949 escape until 1953. We know he consulted with Fort Detrick scientists and CIA operatives, that he worked for the USDA for a brief stint, and that he spoke regularly with Plum Island Director Doc Shehan in 1952. Traub can be physically placed on Plum Island at least three times, on Dedication Day in 1956, and two visits, once in 1957, and again in the spring of 1958. Shehan, who enforced an ultra-strict policy against outside visitors, each time received special clearance from the State Department to allow Traub on Plum Island soil. Research unearthed three USDA files from the vault of the National Archives. Two were labeled Tick Research, and a third, E. Traub. All three folders were empty. The caked on dust confirms the file boxes hadn't been opened since the moment before they were taped shut in the 1950s. Preposterous as it sounds, clandestine outdoor germ warfare trials were almost routine during this period. In 1952, the Joint Chiefs of Staff called for a vigorous, well-planned, large-scale biological warfare test program with all interested agencies participating, unquote. A top-secret letter to the Secretary of Defense later that year stated, quote, "Steps should be taken to make certain adequate facilities are available, including those at Fort Detrick, Dugway Proving Ground, Fort Terry, Plum Island, and an Island Field Testing Area," unquote. Was Plum Island the island field testing area? Indeed, when the Army first scouted Plum Island for its Cold War designs, they charted wind speeds and direction and found that, much to their liking, the prevailing winds blew out to sea. One of the participating interested agencies, unquote, was the USDA, which admittedly set up large plots of land throughout the Midwest for airborne anti-crop germ spray tests. Fort Detrick's Special Operations Division ran vulnerability tests, unquote, in which operatives walked around Washington, D.C. and San Francisco with suitcases holding Serratia marcescens, a bacteria recommended to Fort Detrick by Traub's nominal supervisor, Nazi germ czar, and Nuremberg defendant Dr. Kurt Blohm. Tiny perforations allowed the germs release so they could trace the flow of the germs through airports and bus terminals. Shortly thereafter, 11 elderly men and women checked into hospitals with the never-before Serratia marcescens infection, the never-before-seen Serratia marcescens infections. One patient died. Decades later, when the germ tests were disclosed, the Army denied responsibility. A Department of Defense report later admitted that the germ was, quote, an opportunistic pathogen causing infections of the endocardium, blood, wounds, and urinary and respiratory tracts, unquote. In the summer of 1966, special operations men walked into three New York City subway stations and tossed light bulbs filled with Bacillus subtilis, a benign bacteria, onto the tracks. The subway trains pushed the germs through the entire system and theoretically killed over 1 million passengers. Trials were also run with live, virulent, anti-animal germ agents. Two hog cholera bombs were exploded at an altitude of 1,500 feet over pig pens set up at Eglin Air Force Base in Florida. And turkey feathers laced with Newcastle disease virus were dropped on animals grazing on a University of Wisconsin farm. The Army never fully withdrew its germ warfare efforts against food animals. 2 years after the Army gave Plum Island to the USDA, and 3 years after it told President Eisenhower it had ended all biological warfare against food animals, the Joint Chiefs advised that, quote, research on anti-animal agent munition combinations should continue, as well as, quote, field testing of anti-food agent munition combinations. And, skipping down, at least six outdoor stockyard tests occurred in 1964 and 5. Simulants were sprayed onto stockyards in Fort Worth, Kansas City, St. Paul, Sioux Falls, and Omaha in tests determining how much foot and mouth disease virus would be required to destroy the food supply. Had the Army commandeered Plum Island for an outdoor trial? Maybe the USDA lent a hand with the trial as it had done out west by furnishing the large field tests. After all, the Plum Island Agreement between the Army and the USDA allowed the Army to borrow the island from the USDA when necessary and in the national interest. Traub might have monitored the tests. A source who worked on Plum Island in the 1950s recalls that animal handlers and a scientist released ticks outdoors on the island. Quote, they called him the Nazi scientist. When they came in 1951, they were inoculating these ticks, unquote. And a picture he once saw, quote, shows the animal handler pointing to the area on Plum where they released the ticks, unquote. Dr. Traub's World War II handiwork consisted of aerial virus sprays developed on Insel Reims and tested over occupied Russia, and of field work for Heinrich Himmler in Turkey. Indeed, his colleagues conducted bug trials by dropping live beetles from planes. An outdoor tick trial would have been de rigueur for Eric Traub. Somebody gave Steve Nostrom a copy of John Loftus's The Ballara Secret at one of his support group meetings. Steve had long suspected that Plum Island played a role in the evolution of Lyme disease given the nature of its business and its proximity to Old Lyme, Connecticut. But he never publicly voiced the hunch, fearing a loss of credibility. Hard facts and statistics earned him a reputation as a leader in the Lyme disease field. Now, in his hands, he had a book written by a Justice Department attorney who had not only appeared on 60 Minutes, but also had brought down the Secretary General of the United Nations. Nostrom disclosed the possible Plum-Lyme connection on his own television show. He invited local news reporter and Plum Island Ombudsman Carl Grossman to help him explore the possibilities in light of the island's biological mishaps. Asked why he wrote about Loftus's book in his weekly newspaper column, Grossman says, quote, to let the theory rise or fall, to let the public consider it. And it seemed to me that the author was a Nazi hunter and a reputable attorney, This was not trivial information provided by some unreliable person. And this spurred a major inquiry, not only into Plum Island, but the possible connection with Dr. Eric Traub. Among the people who was looking into this was Mike Forbes, a congressman from that area, Congressman Michael Forbes. Forbes then asked Dr. Moon of Plum Island about the allegations in the Bolaris secret. And some of these investigations took place for a long, long time. Still later, when reporters were asking Plum Island officials about the possibility of a connection between Eric Traub and the tick trials and Lyme disease, we find, if Dr. Eric Traub continued his outdoor germ experiments with the Army and experimented with ticks outdoors, the ticks would have made contact with mice, deer, and more than 140 species of wild birds known to frequent and nest on Plum Island. The birds spread their toxic cargo to resting and nesting perches atop the great elms and oaks of Old Lyme and elsewhere, just like they spread the West Nile virus throughout the United States. The USDA spokesperson Sandy Miller Hayes is unconvinced about the possibility of a link between Lyme disease and Plum Island. And skipping down again, a PR expert, Hayes had Scientific American eating out of her hand in June 2000 when they reported her as saying, quote, "We still get asked about the Nazi scientists," unquote, with the slightest trace of weariness creeping into her voice, unquote. In their feature story on Plum Island, the prestigious magazine dubbed the intrigue surrounding the island as a, quote, "fanciful, fictional tapestry," unquote. Parenthetically, I would note that Scientific American is owned by the von Holtzbrinck firm. The von Holtzbrinck family were early followers of the Nazi Party, and that they employed former Nazis, including a notorious SS man, to head up some of their publications in the post-war period, so it should not necessarily come as altogether surprising that they would poo-poo the Nazi Lyme disease Plum Island connection. You know what, we're going to take because I'm going to try to fit in one quote. Skipping down, of some of the details of the tick work conducted on Plum Island, the lab chief failed to mention that Plum Island also worked on hard ticks, a crucial distinction. A long-overlooked document obtained from the files of an investigation by the office of former Long Island Congressman Thomas Downey sheds new light on the second, more damning connection to Lyme disease. A USDA 1978 internal research document titled African Swine Fever notes that in 1975 and 6, contemporaneous with the strange outbreak in Old Lyme, Connecticut, quote, "the adult and nymphal stages of Ablomna americanum and Abloma cayunes were found to be incapable of harboring and transmitting African swine fever virus," unquote. In layman's terms, Plum Island was experimenting with the lone star tick and the cayenne tick, feeding them on viruses and testing them on pigs during the ground zero year of Lyme disease. They did not transmit African swine fever to pigs, said the document, but they might have transmitted BB to researchers or to the island's vectors. The lone star tick, named after the white star on the back of the female, is a hard tick. Along with its cousin, the deer tick, it is a culprit in the spread of Lyme disease. Interestingly, at that time, the lone star tick's habitat was confined to Texas. Today, however, it is endemic throughout New York, Connecticut, and New Jersey. And no one can really explain how it migrated all the way from Texas. Sure is strange how that tick migrated all the way from Texas to New York, Connecticut, and New Jersey. It must have been really hard work. That concludes For the Record program number 480, titled Plum Island Lyme Disease and the Eric Traub File. This is being recorded on October 3rd of the year 2004. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.